Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 14th, 2010, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. Today, Lavendar will be releasing a major story from the vault called Crack Between the Worlds. Because of the importance of this episode, the chat room will be closed today to avoid distraction. After the story, we welcome your comments or questions, and the call-in number is 917-889-8292. That's 917-889-8292, and then press 1 if you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. This episode will be rebroadcast on Saturday the 18th with live questions afterwards. Before I introduce Lavendar, I'd like to mention that if you register for free here at Blog Talk Radio and click the little red heart on our podcast player or the word follow, you'll get an email notice when our next show is coming in case we don't know you yet. All of our past shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. If you're new to our show, you've missed a lot of chapters, but they're still available for you to catch up. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of fascinating and necessary information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, like Lavendar's story of the discovery of star markings, Solar Return, Your 10 Hours of Power, and the Teton Reports. It's a free internet classroom library for Starseed. We also have an archive of past teleconferences you can hear on our headline news page. Just click the scrolling banner on the main page, and it takes you to the headline news page. Once you're there, near the bottom of the page, you can also find the video slideshow where Lavendar tells the details about her discovery of star markings and the Pleiadian lineup she spent in the Great Pyramid with a Pleiadian ship overhead conducting a giant walk-in procedure, and it's a spellbinding story. You can see the pictures on our main site. Just go down the list of links on the left and click Magical Moments Caught on Film. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. That's starseedhotline.ning.com. I'll be introducing Lavendar in just a moment, but first, I'd also like to mention that she has written 2 books for Starseed, which are now available as e-books on our site. The first one, 50 Questions and Answers, is a transmission from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station, where she had the opportunity to ask 50 profound questions and be answered clearly and truthfully by Silavon, an ascended guardian of this galaxy. The second e-book, Quartz Crystals, A Celestial Point of View, is a comprehensive guide for the starseed use of crystals, including solar star dates for the next 10 years for charging crystals with galactic frequency. These books are a must-read for starseed to understand the galactic big picture and your part in it. If you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Again, 888-881-0881. If you'd like to learn about the new device that disables unsupportive implants, relieves pain, and resets your energy, call our toll-free number or email Lavendar at lavendar@starseedhotline.com. And the spelling, get it right now, it's L-A-V-A-N-D-A-R. And now, it's time to introduce Lavendar with her remarkable story, Crack Between the Worlds.
On March 4th, 2000, I discovered on the sightings.com webpage a story about an event that shook my soul to its foundation. Giant Rock, a huge boulder sitting in the area of Landers, California, had suddenly split open, exposing a gleaming white granite interior. Giant Rock had long been a sacred site for UFO researchers, along with Native American lore. The description of the splitting of the rock is presented in an article by James Twyman, author of Emissary of Light and Secret of the Beloved Disciple. His website, www.jamestwyman.com, and a news article can be found from the High Desert Star newspaper dated Wednesday, February 23, 2000. So why did the news of the splitting of Giant Rock have such an effect on me? Because I've been holding a series of stories for several years concerning light information from ETs that are influencing our planet. Somehow, I've been given the insight to journal some events that started to take place at Giant Rock, starting back in 1976. These events were witnessed by several people. Some are still living, while others have crossed over. As I looked at the before and after pictures of Giant Rock, I knew that I would need to print it out and look at it many times over the next few days. Seeing the two pictures of Giant Rock, the before picture I knew so well, and the after picture, well, startling. It was a shock to my system. I knew that it was a signal to me. Seeing the cracked rock created in my being a release of light information that I'd been holding for over 25 years. It seemed that every file in my brain's computer wanted to download, and I kept saying, oh no, not now, it isn't, I can't do this now. I instantly knew that I had to put up my visible hands to my head as though I could stop this. And I kept chanting, no, 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 as though I had any power over memories of this magnitude. It was at that moment that I felt an outside presence enter the room, and a calming came over me. This presence was not visible, and yet I was aware that it was there. The struggle with the filing system in my head seemed to be closed off, and all at once I knew that within 24 hours, I'd be released to write this story. Sacred time and space would be provided for me, and I'd simply sit down properly and release to the keyboard of my computer what I could remember or what I'd be allowed to remember. For days now, it seemed that information about Giant Rock was about to surface. The day the rock actually split was on a Monday, February 21st, 2000. My mother made a statement to me that certainly got my attention. At that time of the writing of this, my mother was 85 years old and in a wheelchair. I had taken some of her artwork out and noticed that she had about 18 canvases that were unfinished and not signed. I asked her if she'd sign the pictures as I felt that her signature should be on them, and she replied that she would not sign a picture until it was finished. I promised her that if I could take art lessons and learn some of her techniques, that perhaps I could finish some of her paintings. She agreed and proceeded to tell me about each picture and what was needed to finish it. When I came to a painting that was of the sand dunes and mysterious blue and pink sky, I blurted out, oh, this can be the picture of me at Giant Rock with George Van Tassel. My mother squinted her eyes with that little leprechaun look and said, yes, and you haven't finished doing what you said you'd do. And I said, well, I think I've done about 25%. And she said, well, when are you going to do the rest of the story? And I said, well, I don't know. The thing that amazed me about her statement was that I couldn't remember telling her anything about my promise to George Van Tassel. I looked at the painting of the sand dunes, and I could see, just as though it were yesterday, George walking toward the dunes and me walking back to the house where he lived. I also remembered that it was the last time that we had a three-hour one-to-one talk. In fact, I can now say with certainty it was the last time I saw the true essence of George Van Tassel, period. The vision of me walking towards the house and not looking back seemed to freeze frame in my brain. All at once I said, Mother, I know what I will paint. A man walking in one direction and a woman walking towards us. She said, you'll never, and I mean never, learn to paint people And with that, she just totally dismissed the painting. And a mother and daughter shutdown happened with me. It occurred right there, right then. You know, the kind of electromagnetic psychic pulses that happen with certain genie bloodlines. And my mother was a genie, and she was certainly out of her bottle. I took the canvas down on the floor, and as I placed it, a series of pictures started flashing in my head. They were the day that George took me for the walk and gave me information about ETs, walk-ins, mind control, ET government experiments, advanced technology, and just straight spiritual insight. He clearly defined his ET source, and from his perspective, clues of their experiments. He turned to me, and his gentle voice said, "You know, one day you'll need to release this light information to the world, and you'll know the right time, because the signal will come when giant rock cracks. And this will signify a communication line that represents the crack between the worlds. When this happens, then that'll be your signal to release your light information, but with a lot of discernment." I asked him what he meant by when giant rock cracks, and he went into a great explanation about this information concerning the crack between the worlds, and said that as a demonstration and in unison with all the dimensions there, it'd be lightning from the sky, and the boulder would just simply crack open. He said it wouldn't happen for a long time, and that I shouldn't concern myself with it now, but that I was only to remember it when giant rock would crack. He said that I would write it down and pass it on to the next 7 generations of people to come. And I asked him, "Well, why so long a time?" And he said, "Well, the light information that I'm going to give to you will not be understood by many until then. And there'll be those that will relate to this, and it is for them that you must pass this light information on." As we walked through the sand dunes, he related information about time travel and rejuvenation and ET technology and walk-ins and dimensional interconnectedness that occurred with certain codings and timings. He was able to transfer this light information in 3 hours, but it would take me 25 years to live it, decode it, and then translate it into story form. At the time, I was 33 years old and just starting on my spiritual journey into something that I have referred to as Beyond Z. Through these years, I've come to know and understand some of the information that George gave me that day. Some I have already written about, while others' aspects have been experienced but not yet journaled. Now that the rock has cracked open, it seems to signal to me that perhaps it is time to release the information about the stories of Giant Rock, George and Doris Van Tassel, and the visitations of the ETs. I can hear him saying this as clearly as though it were yesterday, and I said to myself, "Not now. This is not the right time." And I pushed away the memories and pushed my mother in the wheelchair out of the room. As part of this coordinated coincidence, a few days later, I received a phone call from Ariel telling me that she'd been in contact with a man who'd been to Giant Rock and had many visits with Doris Van Tassel, George's second wife. I thought this seemed odd, especially after my recent experience with my mother and the sand dunes painting. As Ariel talked, I started flashing in on a series of events that had taken place at Giant Rock, and once again I said, "Oh, not now, this isn't the time," as I continued to push even further back my memories as they were coming to a place that I call crap between the worlds. It was all that I could do just to listen to her, explaining her relationship with her new friend. I was experiencing a series of flashing pictures and trying to listen to her at the same time. Pretty soon, I had to turn my screen off and just go blank. Sometimes, this is the only way that I can hold my sanity together. I was on automatic pilot now and knew it. Also knew that something was approaching from the crack between the worlds. The next time, I didn't know if I could stop the visions with a simple blank screen. And through the years, I've learned the cadence and the delivered system from the otherware. And it seems as though they use this 1, 2, 3 punch system just before they knock me out with sacred data or before they release me to download information. I've never been able to discern whether it's incoming or outgoing or both. Being dyslexic like I am, I guess it doesn't matter. Before I talk about my walk with George in the sand dunes, I should mention what happened to me on February 7, 1977. It all started with my romantic fling with a young man from Alaska who owned a helicopter company. I was truly smitten, and his sexual, physical prowess kept my head spinning. On New Year's Eve, we were drinking Jack Daniels and really partying on the strip in Vegas. At the moment of midnight, he took me in his helicopter and we buzzed the strip and flew back to the airport. How we escaped the police and death is beyond me. He went home with me that night and moved into my apartment. The next day, I discovered that my favorite wristwatch with tiny diamonds was missing. My father had given me this wristwatch for my high school graduation, and it was very, very special to me. I retraced my steps and toured every casino, but to no avail. I was simply devastated and felt a part of me was truly missing. We spent all of January in romantic bliss, until one night while dancing at the Mount Charleston Lodge, I became overwhelmed with a strong feeling that he was going to leave me for my best friend Diana. It was so strong that I fled the dance floor and immediately went home. He tried to convince me that this would never happen, that he truly detested Diana. The next day I tried to shake this vision, but I couldn't. He brought me flowers, we had a romantic dinner, then went downtown to see a movie. When we got home, I had such a foreboding that I sat down with a bottle of Jack Daniels and drank most of it. When I went into the bedroom, I heard a voice tell me to look at him sleeping and remember it would be the last time he would spend the night there. I was drunk and thought I was hearing things, but I remembered it. The next morning, a voice started speaking inside my head again, saying things like, "Watch him get dressed, watch him eat breakfast, now watch him walk out the door, for he will not be back. You will not ever, and I mean ever, see him again." I heard this, but didn't want to believe it. Sure enough, that night, Diana called me to tell me he was over at her house. They stayed in bed for 2 weeks, and then they got married. He never came back for his clothes, and I never saw him again. He vanished out of my life. I was out of my mind with grief. I canceled all my appointments and wouldn't leave my apartment until I received a phone call from Doris Van Tassel from Giant Rock on February 7, 1977. She asked me if I would come immediately to see her. She said it was urgent. I had a girlfriend named Sally that had her own airplane, so she flew me down there. And there was a landing strip at Giant Rock, because it used to be an airport. When I got out of the plane, there was Doris, thin, petite, white pixie hair with arms waiting to greet me. As she hugged me, I felt a sense of release from my heartbreak, almost like it fading from my mind. She grabbed Sally and said, "You know, Lavendar needs to be left alone so that she can sit inside the room below Giant Rock by herself. She needs, you know, clarity." And with that, they both drove off to the house, which was about a mile away. I was stunned, and yet I obeyed and went down the stairs to the room under the rock. This room had only one door in or out. I was there several minutes. When I started to climb the stairs to leave, I heard a voice behind me. When I turned around, there was this dark-haired man who was bald on top. He looked like he had put on a really, really bad hairpiece because the hair didn't look real. I noticed that his skin had no pores, and he looked bronze, like someone had just chiseled him out of a statue. His face, well, he was quite handsome. He reminded me, you know, of a cross between actors John Saxon and John Gavin. He was taller than me, and yet I felt the same size when in his presence. His eyes, well, what can I say? It wouldn't make any sense. They were gold, and then blue, then green, then black, then rainbow colors that aren't even in our spectrum. How do you describe a color with no reference point? Startled, I said, who are you and what do you want of me? The next thing that happened was so freaky that it blanked my mind where I couldn't hear any words come from him. All I remember was that he motioned for me to open my hand, and I did. I looked down into my hand, and there was my lost wristwatch. As he closed my hand and held it, he filled me with so much light that my five senses went into a blur. I couldn't see, hear, or smell. I was just totally overwhelmed. I can't even tell if I shut my eyes or not. The only thing I remember after that was he telepathically told me that I would not be able to convey to anyone about this transfer of light information until I had experienced it by living it. He told me, you are the demonstration and experiment of light information, and because of this, many adventures will be forthcoming, and you're to journal them. Hold them in sacred space until such a time as light information demonstrations will be embraced by those of like mind. If you try to tell anyone of this before the time, they'll be erased with this knowledge and not be able to keep it, nor tell anyone ever about it, because you're going to be alone with this. But there will be those of us that will come throughout your life to present different levels of light information that opens doors of other realities, other dimensions, and you will have direct contact with those of us of extraterrestrial heritage, which is not of Earth. You'll be loaned out to different species for short durations in order to journal their evolutionary contributions to Earth. And during this time, you'll be closely monitored through your double pineal and by crystal implants that we will give you. Through this series of adventures, you will go beyond the limb. This will be a turning point. Then terms of endearment. And you'll remember these phrases as they'll become codes that will be released with some of these adventures. These were the names of movies of an actress that I would empower later. Then he placed his hands on my head, and I saw pictures of different vistas of trees and limbs, an environmental structure, and around these trees were images of people who looked like me, dark hair, blue eyes. I saw movie stars. First, there was Natalie Wood, then Elizabeth Taylor. In the distance were Joan Collins, Barbara Parkin, Susan St. James, Susan Plachette, Elizabeth Ashley. The authors, Jacqueline Suzanne and Ayn Rand. Then off to one side, I saw male figures. They were also famous. Burt Reynolds, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, and Dennis Weaver, all of whom I met and had interaction with in this lifetime, some more than others. Then I saw Ronald Reagan, Anwar Sadat, Gorbachev, Jerry Brown, Donald Trump, and then a stream of faces I could not identify, of which some of them showed up in my life in the next 25 years. Then I seemed to be going back in time, and I saw all the founding fathers of America, and I knew them all by name. Then the scene changed, and I saw a map with the names Athens, Greece, Cairo, Egypt, Israel, island of Aruba, Yucatan, Hawaii and Kauai, Sedona, Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Rio Dulce, New Mexico, Washington, D.C., and two faces that I didn't know at that time. I saw me on several occasions at the White House, surrounded by people that I would come to know later, congressional and Senate members and presidential hopefuls became a collage of characters parading through my life. It became obvious to me that ETs were intertwined in the political arena. Then I saw a group of fast-moving slides of the globe and a map of 33 places around the globe. He took his finger and pointed to every one of them and then he'd press on my forehead after each touch of the map. He said that I was to refer to these as the 33 gem PowerPoints of the Crystal Grid system. It would be from here that evolutionary planning would take place. It would be monitored throughout the ages, as it has been designed that way from the beginning of the planet's history. I witnessed the activation of crystal ley lines and grid points by crystalline ET computers that were buried under the ground. A lot of guardians were also at these sites. The indigenous tribes at each location found a bloodline that was worthy of stewardship. This was usually passed down through seven generations in interlocking with other bloodline experiments that would sometimes be interchanged with 14-generation experiments. So much of this information is still surfacing from my memory banks, and it's released a little at a time, depending on who needs to know it kind of thing. Pictures were flashing so fast that I could remember only a small percentage of the information. I was shown how astrology and astronomy work together, and a galactic system based on the 12 time zone system, with certain degrees indicating specific galactic codes used by different species. It was through these pictures that the discovery of star markings was introduced to my filing system, but wouldn't surface for many years. Bloodlines were a big part of this information, as I saw an entire genetic system that is tracked by ETs through blood, plus planetary timing based on certain planetary equations. It would be from here that he said that I could excel in matters of galactic proportions, because this would reveal how ET species help to evolve a planet, both negatively and positively. After the series of movies, then he imparted a brief statement that I didn't understand for many, many years to come. He silently imprinted a phrase, "You are and have always been the light information. You now, come later, but you're coming with the adventure suited for a scribe. You must live this first, and we'll be on the standby every day of your counting. But remember, you belong to no man. You belong to us." Then he embraced me, had me breathe with him, and seemed to walk straight through me, and vanished. I looked down at my wristwatch, and it was running backwards, and that is when I totally collapsed. When I woke up, I was resting on the stairs. I felt like I must be having a nervous breakdown. I thought, I have to give up drinking Jack Daniels. It's causing my mind to go crazy. Then I realized that Doris had called me down to Giant Rock for this experience. How else could I explain the wristwatch in my hand, which had now started running forward, but was off by 2 hours? Over the years, I've tried to play this out in my mind and attempt to remember the rest of what he showed me. I've only been able to pull out bits and pieces of it. However, as my life would take different turns, I would see his face, and somehow I knew that he had foreseen or maybe even directed each adventure. Doris came to get me and take me back to the house for body treatment and dinner. Then Sally and I flew back to Las Vegas in her twin cub airplane. I was changed somehow, for the ache in my heart was gone, and I no longer could remember his name. Now, what was his name? I still don't have it. This would be the first of many romantic erasures to come in my life. Whenever I would venture off my soul mission with a man, the man would be just erased. I mean erased. I had no memory of what he looked or felt like, only a shadow memory that he'd even been part of my life. It takes a certain kind of male energy to even be in my presence, let alone in my everyday life. Not many can handle the galactic pressures that accompany my experiment on the planet. I used to explain it this way. because later in life I was struck 3 times by lightning, and I attributed to that. But after the giant rock experience, well, I knew that ET technology was at work, and somehow it kept my little feet on the path of my future galactic experiences. So here is the story about my walk with George Van Tassel at the sand dunes at Giant Rock. This particular event happened about a month before George passed away. George and his wife Doris had called me to come visit them on this particular weekend. They had invited a select group of people to come and view some important documents that had been put in their care, and these documents were called the Wadi Scrolls. These were scrolls that were found in the Qumran Caves, close to where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. A man named Wadi had found them and had taken them to Stanford University, where they had been scrutinized and authenticated for 7 years. The Van Tassels felt that they wanted witnesses for the reading of this material, and they asked me, Harvey Brevere, and a Jewish couple, the man's name was Reuben, can't remember her name, to bear witness to the reading of these scrolls. They had also expressed to us that they felt that our abilities to track and discern would help them in deciding the fate of these important documents. A man named Leo had recently had a stroke and had given these scrolls to George because he felt that he wouldn't live much longer. George, in turn, entrusted this information to the four of us, and we took turns reading this material, which had been carbon dated, as being written during the time of Jesus the Christ. There were letters from Claudius, Pontius Pilate, Nicodemus, both Marys, and several biblical characters. The translation from the Essenes to English was written by several professors at Stanford University, and we started reading the scrolls in the afternoon and read late into the night. Each of us took turns reading out loud. We would take breaks and discuss what we had read, but mostly we'd end up crying because of the depth of the material. The emotions that this brought up in us was overwhelming. The Jewish couple gave their viewpoint based on their religion. We needed to see through their eyes on how their ancestors would view this particular point of history. By 2 a.m., I suggested that we stop reading and try to get some sleep. Oh, what a joke that was. We all went to our bedrooms, but who could sleep? We just read material that could change the course of religious history. What would happen if this material was released and if people would be allowed to believe it? We were too stun-gunned to sleep. All of us lay looking at the ceiling for hours. Around 4 a.m., a bright blue light flooded all of our rooms as though we needed anything else to deal with. We were frozen in time, but for about 2 hours. In truth, we probably experienced some missing time. At about 6 a.m., when I could move my body, I decided we all needed some breakfast. I went into, overdrive and cooked bacon and sausage and eggs and pancakes and biscuits and potatoes and corn on the cob with plenty of coffee. This was the outlet that I needed at the moment to cook my fool head off. Around 7:30 a.m., we gathered again to eat this feast prepared from the Twilight Zone and started discussing what we had read the day and night before. Just as we were finishing breakfast, there was a knock on the door. There was a woman with a man in a wheelchair. It was Leo, the man that had given George the Wadi Scrolls. He said that he had been awakened in the middle of the night and was told by a voice to get up, get dressed, and drive to Giant Rock to see George immediately because something of importance was happening. He said the voice was so persuasive that he actually was without pain when he went to dress and was free of it as he spoke. I remembered Harvey Brevere kneeling down to speak to Leo, and after a few moments noticed that they both were in tears discussing the Wadi Scrolls. It was a very touching moment. and one that I am not going to forget for a very long time. We all sat around the round table and started reading the scrolls out loud again, except Leo, who only listened as his stroke had taken his speech. We had done about an hour of reading when there was a knock on the door. I got up and answered it, and there, standing tall, was a young Australian man speaking with an Aussie accent. "Hi, my name is Donovan Joyce, and I have written a book called The Jesus Scrolls. I know this seems odd, but I was told by my guides to get on an airplane and fly from Australia to Los Angeles, then rent a car and drive to the desert past Palm Springs to a place called Giant Rock, and once I got here, I would know what to do." I glanced down by the door, and on a table was a copy of his book, The Jesus Scrolls by Donovan Joyce. Someone had sent it to Doris just a few days earlier, and she hadn't had time to pick it up, much less read it. With not a skip of the beat, I immediately invited him in, introduced him to the group, and of course, we all had another round of tears. It was starting to be apparent that, you know, the force was at work, and that two individuals had been instructed by a voice to come to where we were, sitting in a double-wide house trailer, reading from A, manuscript given by Leo, who now had joined us, and B, another author with some very similar information, being driven by voice to come to the desert by way of Australia. What? Does this sound like the Twilight Zone? Yes, because it was. It was a perfect demonstration of when information flows from the crack between the worlds. We finished reading the first chapter around 2 p.m. It was at that point that George closed the manuscript, looked deep within our eyes, and said the following: "Lavendar, Harvey," he mentioned the Jewish couple's names, "he said, I called you here because I trust you. Not only do I trust you, but also I trust your soul and your records. I want you to tell me the truth about what I should do with this manuscript. Don't hold anything back, just tell me how it is." He turned to me and said, "Well, Miss Bow and Era, let me hear it from you first." At first I was shocked that he called on me, but then I just kind of settled into the fact, and without hesitation I just blurted it out. "George, if you try to publish this now, they'll kill you. The Catholic Church alone will have hitmen ready to take you out. You know, anyone that threatens their hold on power and influence of the Church, and this isn't just the Catholic Church, not to mention the Baptist, the Methodist, the Church of Christ, and other religions and what they'll do. You know, all of Christianity is based on the fact that Jesus died for their sins, and guilt over this is used by every religion in order to control the people. The release of this manuscript would jeopardize too many people and too much power. My vote is to put it away in a vault under strict instructions not to be released until the world can handle, through consciousness, such a statement of fact." I spoke with a clarity that even surprised me, although when I think about it now, some years later, it was and is very clear why this manuscript or other manuscripts like it would either be destroyed or kept under lock and key and away from the masses. Now, can you imagine how I must have felt being raised a Baptist reading this manuscript? This went against everything I ever had been taught about the Bible or religion. Although I was studying astrology and was practicing the art of being a mystic, I still had certain beliefs that would, you know, they'd want to stay in place. The reading of this manuscript changed all that. And I have never, and I can say never, been the same since I read this material. George went around the table and heard from everyone what they also thought, and it was decided by a group that this material would be put in the vault. Later, it was established that when George and Doris died, that the material would go to me, and that I would be responsible for its safekeeping during my lifetime. This decision would change the course of my life because the magnitude of the responsibility would require that I probably wouldn't marry and have earth children because I could not put them in such a position. Their lives would never be safe. Every relationship that I would have would go through such a scrutiny. This is what I have learned through these years of silence. When one takes a cosmic oath of this magnitude, then a safeguard system is set up through a system called the Keeper of the Keys. Several keys are to be given, but only one is designed to be the one to release the information at the appointed time. That time would be determined by those aboard the Star of Bethlehem and by the 33 species of galactic intent. Computer readouts would determine this, and those readouts would take place through implants of the people in the planet. It was a gigantic screening procedure through certain readout days. Mostly these days would be called the Pleiadian lineup, which would match November 17, 1819 or May 17, 1819 of any given year. However, because of the escalation of technology and war on the planet, there has been additional days of monitoring. These may start as soon as November 15th or May 15th and last as long as several days after the 19th day. On the Pleiades, this is called the celebration of the planet Earth because we are their children, and they want to know how we're doing and evolving. Kind of think of it as their Super Bowl with everyone around a TV set watching while partaking of their favorite beverage. This has been a tradition for thousands of years, especially since the destruction of Atlantis. The seeding, the watering, the fertilizing, and harvesting of a planet and its people have been ongoing from planet to planet through these evolutionary measures for eons of time. Sometime in late afternoon, George asked me if I would take a walk with him. He said that there were some things that he needed to discuss with me in private. I agreed and put on my walking shoes and hat, and we began our climb over the sand dunes on our way to Giant Rock. In about 10 minutes, when we went out of view of the house, George started speaking to me in a very strange voice. I'd never heard this voice before, but it was one that I knew spoke with great authority, so I listened very intently. He told me that he and other beings, ETs, and spirit world beings had been watching me for years and had been part of a team to prepare me for some extensive work that would be forthcoming in the next 25 years. He said that I had been part of an ET experiment from the moment of my birth and that I was coded in my blood cells. He knew that I was born with a double pineal and I'd been part of a hybrid experiment and that I'd be exposed to other world realities so that I could journal them. He said I was coded in my blood and that these codes would be released upon certain timings and that I'd be monitored day and night for the rest of my life on the planet Earth. He explained to me about ET technology and implants, but more than that, he explained about time travel and what that would mean in the future when people understood the reality of going forward and backwards in time. Another topic was walk-ins, and how that particular experiment was allowed with humans and the beings that be in charge of such soul interchange. Remember, this was in 1977. No one had even mentioned walk-ins at this point, not even Ruth Montgomery or anyone. This was brand new information, and you know, it was really hard for me to hear. When he would see that I would have difficulty in absorbing this information, he would take his hands and put them over my eyes as though he was coating me with his hands. Then he'd look at me in the eyes and stare for long periods to see whether it took or not. This went on for some time with each subject matter that he would tell me about. When he saw that I couldn't handle any more information, then he'd just walk in silence until I would speak. I ask a lot of questions and receive more than enough answers. This went on for about 3 hours. When it came time for closure, he instructed me to take his hands, look into his eyes, and with a jolt that I will never forget, charged me up with so much light that I thought I would explode. He told me to go back to the house and wait for him, that he needed to be alone. He turned and walked toward Giant Rock, and I practically floated back to the house. When I returned, everyone was still talking about the manuscript, but I was totally focused on the information that had just been given to me. I could tell that I had to sit alone with this, so I excused myself and went to the bedroom to rest. Several hours passed, and Doris came in and asked, "Well, where's George?" I told her that he said that he needed to be alone. She informed me that it was now 10 p.m. and that I'd been back since dusk. I must have looked bewildered, as though time had escaped me somehow. Everyone seemed to start being anxious about George, and a search party was convened to go out and find him. They looked for 2 hours, but no George. Finally, when everyone was exhausted from looking, a very calm, peaceful George just walked up to the house and came in the door. A curious thing happened after that. He turned and winked at me and did the following. He went around and touched everyone and talked to them, and in seconds, their entire perception of his absence was erased. I was the only one who was allowed to see this. This was part of my training, and I knew it. Another thing finally came over me. The George that left with me was not the George that came back. In other words, he told me the procedures of walk-ins and how they happen, and now he was one. It was the final demonstration. This was a secret that I would have to keep for some time. In about a month, I got a call from Doris telling me to come at once, that George had just died of a heart attack in a motel. I was in Santa Monica at the time, so it was about 3 hours until I could get there. Doris told me that when his spirit left his body, that the light bulb exploded and the table was split in half with a blue, bright light around it. This didn't surprise me. What did surprise me was when she confided in me that she felt like that she'd been living with the same person ever since, that she had not been living with the same person ever since he came back from his walk that day. She too had experienced another being in his body, and she told me that this being that left was only sent for a short period of time. She wanted me to record this, as she felt that I would know what to do with this material later. I took care of all the funeral arrangements for Doris, as she was in such a state that she could not think for herself with clarity. I don't remember much about this, as I was still processing the fact that George had left the day that we had taken the walk, not the person we were memorializing now. You know, it's been 23 years since that eventful walk with George Van Tessel, and I can truly say that if I had to mark a place in my life where I took a 180-degree turn, it'd be that walk in the sand dunes after reading the Wadi Scrolls. Now, when I wrote this, it was 23 years, so it's been longer than that now. On July 1, 1991, Doris Van Tessel died. I received a phone call telling me that Doris had sold the pages of the manuscript for $10,000 a page. She had distributed them around the world to different people and had made it almost impossible to retrieve. This is the information I was told in 1991. I was devastated to hear this, as every decision I made was readying myself for the responsibility of this manuscript. I felt betrayed. I felt alone. My life went pretty much on hold after that, and not until the crack in the boulder at Giant Rock did I feel the need to write this down on paper. But something about the way that George told me that the rock would crack one day seemed to be the code or signal for me to finally release some of this information. Last year, in 1999, I went to visit someone who had been healed at Giant Rock by ETs. I hadn't seen or heard from her in 20 years. She had recently published a book about the Van Tassels' work and had reprinted a lot of George's former writings. And one night, just before we were to retire, she brought a manuscript into my room. And there sat a copy of the Wadi Scrolls. I was so stunned, I couldn't open them. They stayed unopened by me the entire stay. I had kept my part of the bargain and been betrayed. Now they were back and I wasn't. I knew that if I picked the manuscript up that I could never put it down, so I never did. Everyone was dead now. Harvey, Doris, the Jewish couple, Leo, all except me. No, thank you. I got the message, and it's still the same message that I gave Doris when he asked me what he should do with the manuscript. The world is still not ready, nor would it be ready for some time to come. Now, here's the rest of the story that emerged in 2005. On my way to San Diego to catch a cruise ship for Spiritual Cinema Circle, I stopped by to see this woman again, as I was now reconsidering looking at the scrolls. Maybe I'd been too hasty with my decision. Perhaps now I could maintain a more balanced degree of sanity concerning what I had already experienced through the years concerning the Wadi Scrolls. I was aware now that other scrolls were coming forth, and I noticed that no one was being killed for it, so maybe I was safe after all. The Da Vinci Code and other books had paved the road for this kind of spiritual reevaluation, and I knew that I held some galactic codes that would take spiritual seekers on a galactic adventure that would shed some light on their already curious minds about the truth concerning Christianity. I wasn't sure how far I wanted to take this information, but at least I was willing to pick up the scrolls again and make that determination. Get yourself ready to fall off your tricycle for this next revelation. When I mentioned to my friend that I was ready to read the Wadi Scrolls, she looked puzzled and said, "What Wadi Scrolls?" I refreshed her memory of my visit some years back, and she did remember that I'd been at her house, but she had no memory of any Wadi Scrolls being by my bedside. In fact, she remembered nothing about the Wadi Scrolls, and asked me to tell her about them. I was so stun gun that I couldn't speak, and since we hadn't had dinner yet, I encouraged us to go to the restaurant and continue our conversation there. I noticed that through dinner she was showing signs of dementia and that her memory was truly escaping her. But there was something about the way that she'd been erased totally about the Wadi Scrolls that had me in a state of bewilderment. Had I missed the opportunity by simply refusing to pick up the scrolls again? Was I so terribly hurt and upset by past actions concerning the scrolls that I was paralyzed with regret to the point of complete denial? What had I done to myself and my commitment concerning the scrolls? I'd missed the window, and now no one but me even had the memory of the history of how George had acquired the scrolls. Doris had sold them. I had turned my back on picking them up again. And now, they were lost to me. Now, I guess I'm getting ready to announce part one on Crack Between the Worlds for the exclusive report on Starseed Radio Academy. And I'm confident that many starseed, walk-ins, lightworkers, indigos, and crystal beings will be further activated as this story is broadcast and goes viral through the network of the Internet. I trust that those listening to this story will honor the fact that these are my galactic experiences and will pass this on to others that may honor the source as well as the information. And with that, I now close Until next time, we meet in Galactic Sacred Space for part two of Crack Between the Worlds information, as the secrets from the vault are released with timing to certain codes and certain planetary activations on the planet. Thank you.
Well, Lavendar, I want to thank you for revealing and sharing this story with us. I know it, I've heard it many times before, but every time it's like it's the first time. And we are going to open up the phone lines. I know we have a lot of people that have called in. Lavendar, are you ready for questions?
I am. Thank you.
Okay. Questions or comments. If you have something you want to say, make sure you press 1 so that we know that you're not just listening. Okay. We have a caller from 706 area. Is this Helen? Hello, you're on the air. Area
this is
706.
This is Nick.
Oh, Nick. Okay, I thought you were going to be calling from a different area. Hi, Nick.
No, I'm doing quite well. It was a fascinating story. One of the comments I'd like to make is I've known Lavendar for 25 years or so, or maybe a little bit longer. And all that time, and we've connected some, and there's been a lot of years where we haven't connected. But I've always felt that she had something that I needed to know. And I never, you know, I got a lot of information from her, but I never quite got everything. So maybe
no. Nobody has. It's still coming. I mean, that's part of the reason.
Well, I understand that, but now I understand a little bit about why I felt that way,
uh-huh.
And why it the information did not come. So, from my perspective, it's a quite real experience.
It's more real than the normal third dimension. Lavendar, you have a comment? Or?
And Nick, you've always been one of my favorite people, and you and I have traveled through many different experiences together, and I always acknowledged you as being the attorney for the Tesla kids, because I always know that you protect them and all with all their inventions and the things that they're doing. So thank you so much for your comment.
Well, I certainly appreciate you and all the work that you've done. A lot of it by yourself with probably no one to turn to except your inner guides, and that's quite an accomplishment.
It has been a very lonely journey at times, for sure.
I can imagine it would be.
Well, Nick, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us, and we're all in the same room now. So I'm going to move on to the next caller. Nick, thank you again. Okay, from the 928 area, you're on the air.
Hi, Ariel.
Yes.
This is Anne from Sedona.
Hi.
Hi, Lavendar. Listen, I can't tell you how I'm feeling right now, but it has touched something in my heart, and it has opened me, and I think it is so important right now, you know, with so many of us reading The Expected One and all of this business about Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and all of this seems to be coming out right now at this point in time. Seems to be everything needs to be made aware or open. It's us being raised in consciousness is what it is. And for you to be so directly involved in that, I think is such a tremendous testimony to who you are and why you are here. And your whole association with George Van Tassel, I think is so fabulous that you had that experience with him. And all of us who have been in this UFO alien business for so many years knew that he was a very special person. And, of course, you knew that better than any of us. And I'm overwhelmed. It has really touched my heart. And I want you to know how, I want you to know how thankful I am to have made your acquaintance and to say that I know you and you're a friend. The only question I had, we haven't had part two yet, so maybe I should just wait until we get to part two, but thank you so much. And have you ever seen Mr. Starman again?
No, not physically, like I had in the under the rock.
Yes.
But his face has come to me on many occasions, and I have felt presence. You know, I think they were kind of watching to see how my nervous system could handle certain interchanges, and I think they probably decided not to flash down too much after that. I think that what they decided. And thank you so much. And I really regard you as someone that's in my inner circle now, and I regard you as someone that I hope will be working with me for some time.
Oh, we will. We will, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Anne. And we're going to move on to the next call, so we'll talk to you later. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have another caller from the 928 area, 928-202. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Nina Joy.
How's
and,
Nina?
Hi. And Bracken's here, too.
Yep. Oh, great. Well, do you have a question or comment for Lavendar?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for all of it, and to tell her and tell you, darling, that we love you so much, and our arms are around you always, and it's a pleasure and a privilege knowing you.
Well, thank you, Nina and Bracken. And in fact, Bracken was actually with me, I believe, at the time when I got the phone call that Doris had died and had sold the pages of $10,000 a piece. And I remember him taking me down in his motorhome to Key West to just cool me out because he could tell how devastated I was. You remember that, Bracken?
Yeah, you really needed to chill out for a while because that was a very huge event that had an effect on you and through you had an effect on me because I knew how large of a situation that was. And yeah, we went down to Key West and chilled out for a while, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I want to thank you for, you know, putting your arms around me and just kind of, you know, taking care of me during that time because I kind of went berserk for a little while, and I have to admit that. But you took care of it, and I appreciate that. And also, you know, I understand that you're doing some fabulous work now. And I might say that I was at the birth of their first child, and now Joy, and it was an underwater birth. We were in Maui. And, Nina, you've written a book about that now. And if you want to tell the audience about your book and about your website, go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm actually today, I was editing some more of the book, re-editing and doing a little adding on to the very end of it because it's called A Star is Born, Fearless, Painless, Birth, and Beyond. And our website is, we have two websites, one for the birthing website, but the other one is our main one that you can get to everything that we're doing right now is now.net. Very simple. www.now.net. And the book is about my three amazing galactic water births. Yes, Lavendar, our beautiful friend, was there with us, and we just holding the point of light and dark where they should be. And I just wanted to tell you on air how much I love you and appreciate you doing that for us. There was some craziness that night. Mountjoy was coming through me, and you held it all together for us.
Yes, I remember there was a person there that wasn't supposed to be there, and he wanted to see the birth. And I remember the ship came down and flooded the room with blue and green light and just scared him so bad that he grabbed his suitcases and ran out the door and got on an airplane and left.
I know, and it was just amazing. It was a long labor, and I explain all of it in the book. In fact, you're in the book, Lavendar, and all of what actually happened that night. So not everything, but most of what happened that night. And the book came out really, really great, and we're hoping to share it with the world real soon.
Okay, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. We're going to move on to our next call. Bye, Nina. Bye, Bracken.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have a call from 719 that looks like Belva's number. Hi. Belva.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, and I know you've got... I know you've got a comment for Lavendar.
I'm here.
You've always been here. You've always been there. Lavendar, introduce Belva.
Well, Belva, she was the one that introduced me first to George Van Tassel and the Giant Rock, and we've had 30 years of just high strangeness and adventures, and Belva, it has just been part of my life, just seems like forever. So, Belva, I'm just so glad that you were able to come on the show and hear the show. And I told you when I called you today, I said, you know, I'm about to release the story, and I really want you there. So I'm so glad that you've come on the show.
It was terrific. And I'm trying to remember, weren't you there at the premiere of the movie Close Encounters when George was there? Weren't you there with me?
Yes, and I remembered saying Mercury was retrograde, and I said, Mercury's retrograde and that film's going to break, and everybody looked at me like I was nuts, and Belva said, just wait, and sure enough, the film broke, and then we were under the spotlight of everything that was happening. Remember that?
Well, he handed me that piece of metal from Hangar...
From the
UFO that they have in New Mexico. He had that piece of metal. It was paper thin, light as a feather, but it was a piece of the UFO that he got from, what is it, Hangar?
18, yeah.
18. It was, and that was George. He took it out of his pocket. It was wrapped in a handkerchief, handed to him, put it in my hand and said, "What do you think about that?" I said, "That's Hangar 18. He goes, "Yeah." I handed it back to him. I wished I kept it. He didn't ask for it back. I just, too many things happen and you just, you stay blown away 90% of the time. And now I'm so hung up on Phoenicia and writing this story, all this recall I have about the tablets that are buried. And I'm hoping one day somebody will come along that would be interested in the history of the Phoenician people. And if they are, they can contact me, and we'll go get them. I know where they are.
Well, go get them, Belva.
And how? What's the best way to reach you?
Well, I have my computer or my phone number, 719-689-3048.
Oh, there you have it, boys and girls.
I'm going to have BelvaBloomer.com. It's in the works right now with GoDaddy, so it'll be on pretty soon.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling, Belva. You know we love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Caller from the 702-688.
That's Ivy. I am here. Hello, Miss Lavendar and Miss Ariel.
Hello, is this Ildi?
Yes.
Hello.
I've known Lavendar for approximately 20 years, and Ariel shortly after that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And what I brought to the table for the ladies here has always been grounding and nesting. And I've seen when in need of very calming earth gathering strength. And that's what I've done for her, and she has led me on so much acknowledgement and confiding in the things that mean the most to her, her darkest moments and her happiest moments. I had an opportunity to spend about 3 weeks with her in her home, and I hope I helped.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you have been the grounding force that just shows up whenever I need that energy. And you have that Mother Earth energy, and you have that sisterhood energy that just comes together, and it just works for me every time. Every time. And without
yes.
fail. And you've always been there, and I cherish you greatly, greatly.
Oh.
Thank you so much.
Oh, and Gaia and I thank you
thank
for
you.
What you've achieved.
Well, thank you. We honor you too, Ildi. I'm going to say goodbye now and hang up. I'm going to the next caller from the 415 area. 415, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Paul.
Well, hello.
Hi, Lavendaren.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Lavendaren Ariel, nice to talk with you. Lavendar, I want to thank you so much for your generosity and your courageousness in sharing this story. And even though I've heard a lot of this story in different parts and over several years, hearing the whole story, it was so moving that it really took me a while before I could call, because it's activated something inside me that it really it brought me to tears. And so thank you so much for telling this story finally and sharing this with us.
Well, and thank you, Paul, because, you know, when I met you, I knew that you were one of the Tesla kids. And although you said, well, I don't invent anything, well, but I always have considered you someone that had the Tesla flavor about you, which I always thought would be in film. I always saw you as an executive producer of you know, some movie or something, and so I've always held you in high esteem for you taking your career upward in the film industry. So I hope you keep pursuing that.
Well, you're always supporting me, and I always appreciate that. You're always there, and I just want to support you by calling in and sharing as well.
Okay, thank you so much,
thank
Paul.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Paul. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have, we have several other callers. If you want to say something, you have to hit number one on the keyboard so that we know you have something to say. Okay, we're picking up a call now. This looks like you're calling on Skype, and you're the only one, so you're on the air.
Hey, this is Deborah Ariel.
Hello, Deborah. Hello, good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Glad you could join us today.
Yeah. I was so busy, I almost couldn't join you guys. But yeah, like, I actually have a few questions if you guys wouldn't mind answering them.
Okay.
Well, I was wondering what percentage of children that are being born are crystalline nowadays, and maybe in the future.
Are you talking about the new children that are coming in that have a greater percentage of silica and more crystalline coatings? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Oh, percentage-wise, I don't know percentage-wise, but I know that just millions, okay, millions are coming to the planet. They've been coming to the planet in different waves at different times. And, you know, I know that your birth was, of course, one of those times because you were born on a very special timing and one that I've been tracking for some time. So, yes, you're one of those for sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, I understood that I was different from a lot of people, and I was actually really troubled by it, and I kind of really want to know how we could help those kids learn and develop, because it was really hard for me to go into the school system and to learn, because it was just memorization, which doesn't really make you understand what you're learning.
Well, you know, with the computers and the video games, believe it or not, are actually training and teaching these crystal beings, you know, how to you know, take information and go further. And the internet, of course, is just, you know, going all over the place. And you know, when I was in school, we had a pencil and a piece of paper. And now, you know, the kids have computers. They have computers, in grade school, which just blows me away. So I think that the evolutionary state of the kids, I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be just fine. I wish that, you know, we had more adults that would turn around and, you know, devote some of their time to bringing them along. And I feel like that'll happen, because every once in a while I'll get, you know, a phone call from someone that'll say, you know, I want to write a book for children, or I want to do paintings for children. And though I always try to encourage it, because, you know, we need people to reach back and help these kids come along. So, yeah, I agree with you, Deborah.
All right. Well, that was my big questions, but I'd like to thank you guys, Lavendar and Ariel. And you guys really helped jumpstart me and probably a lot of other people, and recommended everyone, well, a lot of people to me. So that really helped me. That would probably be really lost.
Let me ask you, when you heard the story today, tell me, what did it make you feel? What was your feelings when I finished the story?
Well, I couldn't actually. I came an hour late. I was really busy. I was like trying to rush. So I'm sorry. I'll re-listen to the story, though.
All right. Well, email me and let me know what you think after you hear the story, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Deb. I do want to mention here that this episode will be rebroadcast on Saturday at 7 Eastern Time, and Lavendar and I will both be here after the rebroadcast. We'll be online live for more comments and questions if you had to tune in late, or if you listen to the archives in the meantime and you have a question. You'll have an opportunity on Saturday, 7 Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, to talk to Lavendar again. We're going to move on to our next caller from the 918 area code. That's 918-45 blank, blank, blank. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Carol. And my comment was that there's such a variety of extra kind of happenings today that I think the public is gradually being opened up, not just one kind, but so many different kinds of parallel experiences, or they're beginning to learn that Earth itself isn't existing on just one line of development. And I think it's a frightening thing for so many people, because they were fixed in their mind it was this one way. And I think walk-ins and extraterrestrials and metaterrestrials and a phenomena of different kind is really trying to stretch the consciousness of people. And I think Lavendar's story, and I think the story of many walk-ins, they're all heard with certain speculation and unbelief, and then they start weaving together this openness to phenomena that the world hasn't had before. And I think we're in this major bridging from a pretty closed consciousness to a pretty opened consciousness, and it's going to take some years in here during this bridge time, and all of us need all the support that we can possibly get. So,
and Carol, I must say, I'm so happy that you called in. And I met Carolyn back in 1980, and she came to me and she said, you know, I've got to buy this mountain over at Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and I've got to put in a school, and I've got these 8 kids, and I'm divorcing my husband, and I'm a walk-in. And I said, what, you're going to do this? And you know what, years later, I went and found you again over at Sparrowhawk Village, and you had put together a community and a school, and you can actually get your Ph.D. on metaphysics at your school. And I can't tell you how proud of you I am that you actually did what you said you were going to do. And one time when I, the last time I think I visited you over there, I walked into your chapel. I'll never forget this, was on Pleiadian alignment. And I was bringing a manuscript about Pope Joan. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen you yet, and I walked in, and there was a pink air in your chapel. And as I exhaled, the air was blue. And I just said, oh, my goodness, what's going on here? And then I realized that what you've set up at your Sparrowhawk Village in your place was absolutely divine, and the energies there were divine, and it was a moving experience, and I will never, never forget. I'll never forget how kind you've been to me, and I would come to you and say, well, what do you think of this manuscript? And you just kept encouraging me to stay with it, and that's why I called you today and said, you know, Carol, I'm getting ready to release the story, and I hope that you can come and be on the call. And so thank you so much, because you've been one of my spiritual warriors standing with me with this story. So thank you.
Certainly, and I wish you best of luck, and all of us will pull together and be courageously standing in whatever piece of the truth that each one of us has. I'm glad to be supportive.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome.
I'm going to move on to the next caller. If you have a question, just press 1, and I will know that you want to speak. If you have a comment, we don't have anybody else with their hand up to speak. So, is there anything else, Lavender, that you want to add?
Well, I'm just quite overwhelmed by, you know, the friends that have called in to give me support and to, you know, lend their energies to what I'm doing with this story. You know, I don't really know what else that I'm going to do with the story except to do what I'm doing every week, and that's revealing more information from the vault. I have so much. There is so many parts to this that, you know, every time I look at the material, I think, well, should I do this now? Or, you know, I'd kind of like to hear from my listeners to know, you know, what different aspects that they would like to know about, because I have so much information.
Well, and I'm speaking to the listeners now, if you could imagine, well, the rest of the world was starting families, having relationships, raising children, starting businesses and doing all that. Lavendar was out there by herself holding on this story as she promised and continuing to live the scenes that were downloaded that day under Giant Rock. And she has really held her alignment beyond anything that anyone could imagine, all the things that have come, challenges and at the same time, people to support, you know, from the grounding and the assisting and just, as we call it, people holding the point for her work. We certainly appreciate it, and I know that.
And I must say that, you know, there have been times that I've had to go sit down, and I've quit. I have quit several times. You know, this has been, you know, a very, very difficult journey for me at times. And there's, you know, when it got so overwhelming that I, you know, just couldn't function, I just had to quit and then pick it up again. And so I just want to add that, you know, I'm not perfect in this alignment, I can tell you that.
Well, I have to differ with you there, because I have seen the times when you said, that's it. No more. I can't take it anymore. And the stuff kept coming, and they just waited for you to dust yourself off and stand back up again. So you might have quit in your mind, but in their mind, they never quit. It just keeps coming. Yeah. And I know that you did take time out to help your parents, but that's really, you've been on it. You've just been on it, and you've always been helping people, even when you weren't out traipsing around the world and witnessing all these things and being involved in some major world issues. Still, the people that you have known individually and privately,
right?
You have never stopped being on it. So
you might think you quit.
you might have thought you quit, but anytime I've ever called you up and say, "Tell me about this. What does this mean?" You know, you were on it. You were always on duty. Just maybe not publicly. So, and I know that there's a lot more to come. We are going to be rebroadcasting this particular episode on Saturday with live call-in questions, comments after the show on Saturday. So if you missed anything today, you'll have another chance to call and ask questions. If we have anyone else, we have the phone lines. We have a lot of people listening. If you have something that you want to say and have not yet been heard from, just press 1 so that we know you'd like to make a comment. Otherwise, you can just keep listening as you are. I think we don't have any more questions.
Well, okay. Well, we've been on for, I guess, almost an hour and a half. And I'm sure that, you know, some people have fallen off their tricycle a couple of times throughout this hour and a half. I almost have myself. So maybe we should just call it a night. And hopefully, if you have friends that would like to hear the broadcast, you know, have them tune in on Saturday, because we will be replaying the same show. And I'll be answering questions and commenting if you have any comments. I'll be happy to answer them.
Now that we've said that, we have 3 more people with questions and comments in the on the phone line. So you want to go? Let's go for it.
Let's go until they stop calling.
Okay. From the 303 area. 303 area, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Hi, this is Pam, and I'm just fascinated with your story, and I'm deeply grateful. And I'm curious to know about the Integratron. I've been very, very interested in the Integratron and, you know, where what's happening with it today. And if you have any insight about the future of the planet, like future Integratron.
Well, you know, when I was with George, and he was in the process of building the Integratron, and he went through some heavy challenges trying to finish it, and I was very disappointed that it wasn't able to come to completion the way he wanted. But from my understanding, there was a lot of government interference. They did not want him to finish that because he had put together a series of frequencies and harmonics that when you walk through the Integratron, it would realign your body in such a way as to completely set your cells into the up spiral. And it was like instant healing for all, you know, if someone had cancer, they could walk in and just be healed. And there were just too many opposing forces that did not want this to happen. So I was very saddened to see that was, you know, something that was not completed. However, I must say that I've seen a lot of different technologies come and go, and you've heard me talk about this technology that I've experienced with it's a pad that you lay down on, and you lay on it 8 minutes in the morning and 8 minutes at night. And, you know, that's the closest to the Integratron that I have found. So if anyone is interested in me sending you information about this technology, send it to me at Lavendar, LAVANDAR, at starseedhotline.com, and I will send you information about this amazing technology. as far as the state of the planet, I think that we're just moving right along. We're going to have some wars. We're going to have some disasters. We're going to have a lot of changes. But, you know, that's what it takes for an evolving planet. And as soon as we, you know, get to the state where we no longer have fights over racial issues and we don't have fights over religious wars, you know, then we can have interstellar commerce. And all the Star Trekkies and the people that have been watching sci-fi for years, knowing that, that interstellar commerce is possible in their sci-fi imaginations, will actually be happening, which will be kind of a kind of a joy to my heart to see that take place. But a lot of other things have to take place first.
Do you believe that where we are today, that it would be easier to proceed like with another Integratron without the government interference?
Well, if we could have a place on the planet that would be where it could be built and guarded and made sure that there was no interference, it'd be a great thing. It would be wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
It would have to be someone with a very large bank account to provide the security that you would need.
That's exactly right. I'll tell you something else. You know, when Velva and I went to Giant Rock several years ago, I went to Dennis Weaver's memorial in California, and on our drive back, I said, you know, let's go by Giant Rock. And we drove out there, and I was so shocked because something had come along like a vacuum cleaner and it just sucked up all the energy out of the rocks. I had never experienced anything quite like that. It was like, what in the world has happened here? You know, it really saddened me to see what had happened to this place. It really closed the door on me that I'll never forget how I felt when I left there. You know, it's one thing to lose the Wadi Scrolls, but to lose the energy of Giant Rock, that was the last straw for me. And I think some, I don't know whether it was government technologies or that the ETs did it themselves, but it was, someone had taken, you know, a big vacuum cleaner and just cleaned it up with, and that includes the energies from the rocks. I've never experienced where you can't touch a rock and have energy. It was just devoid of anything. It was very sad.
I had heard that from a Native American.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling, Pam. We're going to move on to the next caller from the 562, area 5-3-1.
There you go.
You're
I'll be right
there.
Yes, hi. This is Kathy Lavendar. I met you in Phoenix, Arizona in 89-90. I just wanted to check in because we haven't had contact, I think, about since then. And I've been finding that I'm being reconnected with people that I haven't seen in a period of 20, 21 years. And I thought it was interesting that you were one of those people that just came back around again. So I was just thinking that I would check in and let you know I'm still out here. I don't know if you remember me. I know you're in contact with so many people. But since I'm back in contact, I thought, well, you know, like I said, I'd let you know I was out here and I'll get in contact personally to kind of get an idea of maybe what my next assignment is since we've come full circle again. And like a lot of people, I wanted to thank you very much for holding the point and holding the point for a lot of us.
Thank you so much. And Kathy, were you Elaine's friend?
Yeah, and Norma's, yeah.
I remember you. Oh, good. It's so good to hear your voice. And let's be in contact, okay?
I've been quite amazed by this 20-year coming around cycle, and I was wondering if you had any information on that as far as people, this time frame and getting back in touch with galactic family, spiritual family, as far as this time frame,
well,
or is that maybe it's just my timing?
You know, if you listen back to the last two radio shows where I talk about August Harmonic Convergence of 87, and
yes,
the conversations that happened to the people then and what's happening this past August 20th. And,
yes.
And you were certainly part of that group that that happened to. And so there are different groups that were, you know, contacted, and some were tagged, some were implanted, some were just simply, you know, observed. But I think there's a 19-year pattern that I've been noticing that's been happening. And I think that you're definitely, you know, being reconnected with people that you started out your journey with, and now here's the reconnect. I think it's just normal.
Okay. Okay, well, Elaine got in touch with me and said, you're not going to believe who I've found resurfaced, at least in my consciousness. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to, you know, tune in. And so I've been kind of tracking, you know, keeping track of you here on the Starseed hotline. But I hadn't contacted you yet, but this time definitely seemed like the right time to do it. So big hugs and much love to you. And I will be in touch and, you know, see, you know, what's up, I guess, for me in this next maybe 19-year period. And how I can help you, you know, hold the point, if, you know, again, if that's what's up, so.
And I know that you can do that very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Okay, thank you. Thank you both very much, and I'll be in touch, Lavendar.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I would like to reiterate here, Lavendar's email is LAVANDAR. If you misspell it, she won't see it. It'll come to me, and I'll have to forward it. So it's LAVANDAR. Okay, we have one more caller with a question or comment. Also, from the 562 area, 56249 prefix, you're on the air.
Hello, Ariel. Hello, Lavendar. It's Alicia. How are you?
Hey.
Oh, hello, Alicia. Thanks so much for calling.
I was listening to the call, and I don't know what you said that triggered some things, but I lost about 3 minutes of time. So I was like, wow, I have to call her and tell her that, because when I came back to, it's like the blog thing had just kept going. I was like, wow, when you were telling the story.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that was interesting. And it was right about the time you were talking about how someone had said, when you were talking about being at Ayers Rock and they were telling you that you belonged to them, that you didn't belong to anybody else.
Yeah.
You were talking about the energy about men not really being able to handle your energy, and somehow I flashed back to something and then came back to something else, and I'm like, wow, that was interesting. Now I have a headache, but it's okay.
Well, that can happen. That can happen. You're so tuned into so many things that you probably have multiple triggers.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know, but that was one of them. I couldn't even talk for a while afterwards. It was like, this. Seriously, I was going to call in, but it was like, this. So I sent an email instead, and then lo and behold, after I send the email, my mouth worked. So it's like, okay, I better call in now. I'm like, didn't Mercury leave retrograde?
Yes, it did, but I think it left a mess behind.
I think it's probably left a trail just for kicks, you know. But I wanted to call and thank you for telling your story. And support you on the call. And I'm very grateful to be part of this team and to be on the planet at this time and to know you guys.
Well, and I want you to know that I used your salt today and I used your incense to, you know, flood this room before the program started, which I just absolutely adore. I don't know what all you put in there, but it just It almost makes me levitate when I smell it.
Wow.
It's not a grounder, in other words. It just takes me
out.
Oh,
yeah. Well, grounding has never really been my specialty. I've usually had to have people around me to ground me, too.
Yeah, I think
that's a common starseed thing is sometimes being disconnected, detached, and no grounding.
Just yeah, that can be difficult sometimes, though, raising starseed children. You just sort of have to go outside and hug a tree.
Yeah.
That's right. That works. That really works for me, hugging a tree. Yeah.
Also, I wanted to let you know that the same thing that your previous caller had said about being put in contact with people she hadn't seen in about 20 years, the strangest thing happened to me as well. I've been put in contact with people I hadn't seen for the last, I'd say, at least 10 to 15 years, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all these people are looking for me on Facebook. So it was the weirdest thing out of nowhere. It's like, oh, hi, oh, hi, oh, wow, oh, hi. It's like, where? It's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a common theme, but I just thought I'd let you know that one's happening over here, too.
Yeah, great.
So it's I'm wondering who else is going to pop up.
Yeah.
I think it's a common program that's running where people are coming through a cycle.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, thank you again, ladies. I just wanted to call and show my support and say hi and let you know some of the strangeness that happened to me. I don't even know if I can call it strangeness anymore.
Normal day.
Just another day.
Thank you so much, Alicia. It's always good to talk to you.
You guys take care.
We will.
Love
Bye-bye.
You both. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, it looks like Velva's back with another question, or she just you just hit one by mistake. I'll just make sure. Velva, do you have something else to say?
When we went back to look at Giant Rockin', it was gone.
You mean when you and Lavendar went back to Giant Rock, it
was
gone?
First we went to Dennis Weaver's memorial, and then we went to the horse races, and then we went to Giant Rock expecting to see this huge room with the piano, all the paintings, and there was nothing there. It was gone. I don't know what happened to it. The rock split, and the great big room that you had to walk down two flights of stairs to get into that big living room with all the books and the paintings and the piano and huge tables and it was all gone like it never was there.
It's been erased. I know. It's crazy.
And the one that had the kitchen area in it, it wasn't there either. They had the screen door. They had a framework for the door. And none of it was there. It was just a rock. And the big rock, the giant rock, was split, like she said. There was nothing there. I walked all the way around it. Thinking it fell in a hole, something happened, and all these people came and took our picture. We went to see the Integraton, and there was these ladies running it. But, I mean, I don't know what they know about what George did or anything. But it was just like the whole episode, 20, 30 years of our life was gone in a blink. And I kept walking around looking, thinking, I have to see the hole where it was. It wasn't there. It just wasn't there. It was just a rock. So I'm telling you, when you deal with ETs, it's something else. The people that fixed my fan belt, you know, that's how I met them. I met them in the 1950s when I took Vernon out in the middle of the desert because I was going to just scare the living business out of him because he wouldn't leave me alone and he wanted to marry me and I thought he was too young. So I thought, I'm just going to take him out there and scare him. And if he doesn't believe in what I believe in, then he can just go away. And I broke my fan belt 27 miles off of the highway in the middle of soft sand. I broke my fan belt. Oh, my God. And there's George. And then this
guy comes in with the strange hair. It's not the same one she saw, but I had seen him too. But this was a blonde one. And he had no pores. And his hair was stuck on it, looked like rabbit fur. And Vernon was a hairdresser, and I'm in back of him. He has no shirt on, and I'm pointing to his neck. He had no little scars and no pores on his neck. And I said, look, look. And I thought, this will never fit. This is the 1950s. I had an MGTD. If you want to buy a fan belt in the 1950s for an English car, you have to write to London and wait 6 months and then get it. And the guy comes in, he said, is this what you were looking for? And I thought, oh, it's probably a Chevrolet fan belt. What in the world is he doing out in the middle of the desert in the rocks with a fan belt? And he went and he stretched it out. He didn't even disconnect my radiator hose. Plop, it fit. I was just,
oh my.
And then he told us about an earthquake that was going to happen in San Francisco, and it was one of the largest earthquakes ever. He gave us the exact time, the exact date, 3 months in advance. And he told us about a light in the sky that was going to light up three states. It was quite exciting.
And what about Vernon? Did he become a believer then?
Total believer. We saw saucers everywhere from then on. We would be driving down the freeway, six lanes of traffic. Nobody else saw them. And here's this huge, enormous saucer where the freeway was coming up between two mountains. Here's this big saucer. And I'm pointing to people to show them, and nobody saw it. But some lady over in the Pacific Beach area called in and said she saw one out over the ocean. And she's the only one that I know of that saw the ones that we saw. But, you know, and coming here, you see them all the time here in Colorado, in Cripple Creek. Because that's why you were here in the first place. There
was something happening. They know where you are. Velvet, they know where you are.
I know. I have never.
You might go with you.
I've never seen so much activity, and for me, being young and having all this happen all at one time, I just thought, okay, Vernon, you can just either believe in this or get the heck out of my life. And we wound up working with George and helping him do every Labor Day weekend, we had this big conference. Once we were in Life magazine, and they used, fisheye camera. And this was like brand new stuff because nobody had ever heard of it. But they did the whole crowd, thousands and thousands of people between two mountains, all out there for the UFO experience on Labor Day weekend. So
Velva, you should get your own radio show and tell some of your stories, because I know that you've got tons of stories too.
Something that things happened to me since I was two. It's just very weird things my whole life, but the recalls are the things that are the most bothersome, because I keep, one minute I'm in Egypt and the next minute I'm in 726 B.C., or I just never know what's going to happen to me from one day to the next. Very interesting, though. It does keep you on your toes and keep you living, walking around, and wondering, now what am I going to do and what's going to happen today?
Just make sure you write it all down.
I have a lot of it written down. I have like 9 recalls that I've recorded, so little by little. And I meet people, and they don't know they have recall. And then they meet me, and they say, I think I know you. And the next thing you know, they're remembering as well. So it's very...
I'm sure you've activated quite a few people just being around. So you know what? I would want to thank you so much for calling in, Velva. We do have a couple more people, and we're starting out.
Okay.
We're running out of time now. So we're going to move on, and... as always, we love you and honor you, Velva. calling in.
Well, I love you, and I love Lavender, so thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have one more caller. Looks like you're calling on Skype, and do you have a question for Lavender?
Oh, hi.
You're calling on Skype.
Oh, hi. Yes. Hi, Lavender. Hi, Ariel. And Lavender, it's Trisha here. I just wanted to mention, I had two wonderful readings with Lavender in the last week, one for myself and one for my daughter. And both of them were just amazing. She's so amazingly talented, and I've loved astrology for 30 years, but nobody has ever mentioned what she mentioned.
We hear that comment a lot because Lavender is the only one that I've ever heard of that knows these things. So
thank you so much
for sharing that.
Lavender, the same thing from the last caller. I was listening to your show, and then there was just times when there was just like a whole section just disappeared, and I kind of came back in my body, and I said, wow, where was I? Because I wasn't here. And my daughter came home, and it took me about 10 minutes to kind of orientate myself again. I kept saying I'm, like, dizzy almost.
There's no telling what kind of things are going to get activated, and certainly if you listen again, it could happen somewhere else in a different place of the story.
Fantastic story.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, Tricia. We do have, I think, one...
Yeah, no, I'll let you go.
Yes. So thank you, and we'll talk to you again later. Bye-bye.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, this is our last question. We have a caller on Skype. Do you have a question or comment for Lavender? Caller on Skype? Hello? We only had two, and you're the other one. So, hello, are you there? Possibly that could be something that got hung up, so never mind. Lavender, thank you so much. I know that this was a major thing for you because it took a lot of courage to finally take the cork out of the bottle that you've been holding sacred for so many years, as you promised you would.
Well, I just kind of thought maybe that now's the time because, you know, we're on a countdown to so many things on the planet, and to reconnect with people that need to know different aspects of this story, I think is important now. And I think that I'm more comfortable with it than I've ever been. And, of course, you've seen me at times when, you know, it wasn't coming out of the vault at all, at all. And there were times that, you know, I took it out and I would show it to someone, and then, you know, they would try to kill me, and then I'd put it back in the vault. So, you know, I stepped out a little bit to show it to a few people here and there, and I was always a little squeamish about showing it. Then all of a sudden, you know, in the last year, of course, you encouraged me to put the website together, and little by little, you know, I put my toe in the water, and here it started coming, and so it started flowing. And so the big story, of course, was this one. But then I have probably at least 10 more big stories right behind this one. And they have to do with some very famous people on the planet, and they have to do with our government and, ancient sites and some other extreme circumstances that came together for me. So everybody stay tuned. This is just the beginning.
As I said in our profile for Blog Talk Radio, if we were Hollywood, you would be the female galactic Indiana Jones, because you really literally, you get in and out of these adventures, sometimes barely with your life, but you come out with the story, the information, and the codes. And, you know, you've got big-time protection, but still, it's got to be nerve-wracking, some of the things that you've lived through. and you're still here to tell about it.
And I have figured out a way with a lot of the people that have called me for charts and for sessions. I'm finding that some of these people that are now clients are really friends from other lifetimes, and we're here to weave a gigantic story, like our friend Georgia Weaver in Las Vegas. She's doing these beautiful paintings, and she called and she said, you know, I think I should, you know, do, I should commission some paintings with the codes that you talk about and some of the things. You know, if I had people that would order a painting with your codes. And so we've been talking about that. So if any of you are interested in knowing more about Georgia Weaver and her beautiful artwork, she's willing to, you know, find some of the codes for the star people and put them in a painting. And we'll maybe have her as a guest on one of our shows really soon. So by releasing the information a little at a time, it started with the website, then it started with doing charts, and then it started with The Expected One and Kathleen McGowan's book. And, you know, it's like it's kind of a drum roll. It goes from one harmonic to the next, and pretty soon they start connecting, and we have
It's a layering until you have an entire symphony.
Yeah, right.
Rather than one person playing the flute all by themselves.
Right. I see we only have, 2 minutes?
We only have a couple of minutes, so once again, I would like to say that our website is starseedhotline.com. Our Starseed support forum is starseedhotline.ning.com. And, of course, please remember to register for free at Blog Talk Radio and subscribe to our show. Click the little red heart or the word follow so that you'll be notified when our next episodes are coming up. We are kind of sticking to Tuesdays at 7. For the most part, so make sure you check in.
And how about our 800 number?
Our 800 number, our toll-free, 888-881-0881. And Lavendar's email is lavandar. And if you have an interest in learning about this new device that disables non-supportive implants, if your implants are helping you, then it'll leave them alone. But if you're interested in finding out about that, it relieves pain, please email Lavendar and ask about that. So, Lavendar, I'm going to sign off now. Thank you so much.
You so much, too, Ariel. Love you so much.
And I love you, too. You've always been there for me, and I certainly appreciate it. And now you're here for a whole bunch of people, and they can call in and talk to you anytime they want.
Okay.
So I'll see you. We'll be back on Saturday this week repeating this episode, and we'll be on live for questions afterwards. So join us then, tell your friends, and see you then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.